We are back on In Focus, News Radio KMAN here at 923, talking with NBAF. We have Mr. Scott Ferris, NBAF Information Technology Director, joining us, along with Dr. Ken Burton, NBAF Coordinator for APHIS, and Katie Pulaski, NBAF Communications Director. And continuing with our conversation here with Scott, you mentioned you'll have about 28 positions on your IT team. What types of positions do you still need to hire in order to complete that team?
Our remaining vacancies right now are in the areas of laboratory endpoint support and systems administration. And as with all of our NBAF positions, those will be posted on USA Jobs when they come out.
Okay. And as far as work going on right now behind the scenes to prepare for construction to be complete and for USDA to take ownership of the main laboratory and campus, what's going on behind the scenes?
We've been installing the network and server infrastructure in the facility, as well as working with the construction team on IT-related questions that come up or specifications that need to be validated, installations that need to be reviewed, changes that need to be processed, that sort of thing. I've also had the opportunity to work side-by-side with some of the contractors as systems installed, so that's been a great opportunity as well. Besides the facility ourselves, our team's also been busy with the other NBAF operational staff that's been hired over the last year, get them up and running the temporary office facility, and especially now they've gone out on telework, as we've mentioned. On the scientific side, we've got IT staff involved out at Plum Island with supporting scientists in a variety of projects, including standing up some new lab equipment that will be similar to what we're going to be using here at NBAF. And in addition to getting familiar with that equipment, that's also been able to let us establish a really good working relationship with some of the scientific staff who may be relocating to NBAF in the future. So that's been a good benefit.
You know, just thinking here, how much backup do you have to do? I'm sure there's quite a bit of it, huh?
Like backup of data?
Yeah, backing up of data.
Yeah, we've got there'll be quite a bit of data here, especially with the type of scientific instruments we've got these days. It generates a lot of data. So, yeah, we've got planning systems in place to not only back that up locally, but replicate it off-site as well. So we've got that in case something happens here at the facility.
Yeah. Well, and I know that there's a lot of precautions you have to take, and maybe you could kind of talk a little bit about some of those and that you and your team are doing to ensure the safety of both the employees and the research at NBAF.
Yeah, both DHS and USDA have a proven track record with protecting IT systems at biocontainment facilities. So systems throughout this facility are designed with redundancy in mind, and that's true with IT systems as well. Many of the systems are restricted and isolated to protect the operations. We work with USDA to ensure all IT systems go through an assessment and authorization reviews and get authority to operate so the cybersecurity controls are validated and in place. We have some IT systems that can fail over to an alternate computing center on-site to ensure those control systems and communication systems maintain that redundancy if we should be cut off from external networks. And as we mentioned, data is being backed off-site to ensure that that's available if there's a major outage at the facility. In addition to the control systems, we also have contingency and disaster recovery plans for the business and scientific systems and data, which would include replicating the applications and the data to another data center, so we would have that continuity of operations in case something happened here.
You know, it's inevitable, and a lot of places will probably face this at some point, but IT threats, and I'm curious if you have any examples of IT threats that you've faced in previous roles or situations you heard about that you could share.
Yeah, I've been involved with several cyber incidents in the past, investigated system compromise, denial of service incidents, things like that can happen from external threats. But in addition to internal threats, there's also internal threats. I'm sorry, in addition to external threats, there's also internal threats, and often those are very unintentional. One incident I worked on in the past stemmed from an employee clicking on a link in an email that looked legitimate enough, but unleashed some malware that ended up affecting files on one of our servers. The procedures we had in place, we were able to spot the activity quickly and roll back the affected systems with minimal impact. So we have some protections like that in place to spot that kind of activity. Educating the user base to recognize threats like that is a large part of the cybersecurity program at NBAF, or including the cybersecurity in the culture of safety and security that we're building with all the employees.
In most cases, is it as simple as that? Somebody just clicking a link in the email? Sometimes I think we think of like a 14-year-old kid in their bedroom just trying to hack into places.
Yeah, really, it can be both of those. The social engineering, the phishing emails, those get better and better all the time. They look really legitimate. Really got to train the users to make sure they're expecting an email from somebody if it looks like it came from someone they know, if it's coming from an outside source. But yeah, there's all kinds of hackers on the internet that just, you know, sometimes they just don't have anything better to do, or it's just a challenge to try to go see what they can find out on the network and get into. So got to be watching for both that internal and external threat.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it sounds like you're very thorough in your work, and hopefully won't have any major threats there. I think you guys have things covered pretty well. Katie, I want to bring you on here to the program a little bit. And you know, Scott talked about hiring for his team briefly. Can you update us on hiring for all of USDA NBAF?
Yeah, absolutely, Brandon. So we're about 3 months into teleworking, and we continue to interview, hire, and onboard new team members virtually. So we're getting pretty good at that. It's interesting. We've got about 155 team members either on board or with start dates. And you know, when we do get back into the office, there's going to be all these new faces that we haven't met in person yet. So exciting, for sure. So about 155 out of the 400 that we'll have when we're fully operational. And our goal was to have about 80% of the operational team that's operational, not science, but hired by August, and we are on track to meet that deadline. So I do have a little bit of some neat information to share regarding our team that Dr. Burton and I both thought that listeners might be interested in hearing. So a couple of months ago, we did a little analysis of kind of the backgrounds of our team at NBAF. And so a few data points to mention. About half of our USDA NBAF team members are veterans. And of those, 35% retired with more than 20 years of service. So lots of really great experience there and in service to our country. And then just under half of our employees are Kansas natives, and then the rest are coming from at least 24 other states. And then this one's one of my favorites. So over 70% of our team has the potential to work at NBAF and contribute to its mission for more than 20 years. And so that's really exciting. You know, I included in that statistic, and, you know, you really gain a lot by having folks, you know, that start with you at the beginning and then are able to stay on for a while. So we certainly hope to keep many of our team members on for years to come.
Yeah, that's good news, and great that you're hiring all those veterans. That's I think people really like hearing that. You mentioned in the past, Katie, that NBAF might be able to start communicating with the public through social media. Has there been any update on that?
Yeah, so I'm really excited. We've been approved to set up both Twitter and LinkedIn accounts for NBAF. So that's going to allow us to just have even more ways to communicate about jobs, about construction, and then also just to be able to educate the community and anyone that's interested about NBAF's mission and activities and research capabilities. We'll be able to share about some of the outreach events we're participating in. I could go on. There's so much we'll be able to do. And while our traditional outreach activity has slowed down some due to COVID-19 pandemic, we do want to make sure that everyone is aware that we're still able to share with community groups and organizations using virtual tools. And then here, as hopefully things continue to open up, we're happy to get presentations on our calendar for later this summer as well. And so as a reminder on that, any MBAS inquiries or outreach requests from the public can be sent to MBAS@USDA.gov.
Okay. Well, we sure appreciate the update as always, and we'll look forward to hearing from you guys again next month. Again, Katie Pulaski, Dr. Ken Burton, Mr. Scott Ferris joining us here this morning. Thank you all for being part of the program.
Thank you, Brandon. We always appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brandon. Have a good one.
All right. We appreciate it, and we will continue in focus after this on News Radio KMAN.